What Black Lives Matter are trying to do is they're trying to become somewhat of like how the Black Panthers, they're trying to create this energy where it's like they're so anti, they're not, but where they have this stigmatism of being anti this and anti that, like anti-white or anti-government or anti-police, and really specifically anti-police. Mm-hmm. You know, they're creating this stigmatism that that's what they are, even though ultimately they're really not. And they don't actually really profess to be anti-police. They profess to be anti-police brutality, anti-police murder, these things of that nature. They use the catchphrase to get into the mind, the psyche of people. You have a lot of people that say, yeah, that makes sense. Like, we do matter, fuck that. So then they start repeating it and start the hashtag, not even realizing in the beginning that this was an established movement that they was actually propagating. And so now you got what you got. And now it's a movement where the youth seem to be gravitating to right now, because they see that a lot of newcomers, you know, who haven't been around for years to actually be active, this is their introduction to activism. Mm-hmm. And they have a way to get them excited and make them feel like they're being important and that they're really out here making a change with a picket sign and with these marches and whatnot, and yelling at cops and whatnot. It's a pep rally, you know. Mm-hmm. Even online with the hashtags and the blackouts, it becomes a virtual pep rally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that, you know, with Black Lives Matter, I think they're a very dangerous for Black
people. You think it's dangerous? What are the dangers that you see?
Testing. Is this thing going? What's going on, world? This is your host, Detravius Bethea, and I'm here with another episode of Redefine Print, the podcast. This episode that you're about to hear was recorded about, I guess, 2 weeks ago now. It's with the infamous Che Black. Very interesting guy, very smart guy. To be transparent, I deleted some stuff out of here. This is the hardest editing job that I had to do, not because of something he necessarily said, but something I said. And it wasn't nothing crazy, but it was personal information. Well, it wasn't even personal. It was, I dropped clues that you will be able to find out who I was talking about if you know my inner circle. And just to be clear, I ain't scared of you motherfuckers, but I took it out because I didn't know if these people wanted their political connects compromised. So I took it out. So this is why it's taking me, it's a week late, because I didn't have a chance to really go back and listen to the podcast prior to this week to really cut it up and edit it like I wanted to have it, so that those clues are not in there. I mean, I had the time, but I just didn't do it, to be frank. But this editing I'm using is not necessarily the best editing, but hey, it's a one-man show for now. Y'all can help me out if y'all want to donate or become a sponsor or a supporter. The links are going to be in the description of this podcast. And as always, I want you to like it, rate it, and review it wherever you're listening to it, so we can get some traction on this thing. And sit back, and I hope you enjoy. God bless. Let them know who I got on the podcast right now.
Well, this is the bloodiest diamond strip from the African coast. Your brother, Che Black. Straight like that. You already know.
Straight like that, Che Black. So what's going on, brother? Good to see you, man.
You know, it's great to be seen. It's great to see you as well, brother.
Yeah, it's been a minute. We've been trying to do this. Actually, just a history for the listeners that don't know. Like, we go back to, like, what, 88?
We go back, man. 89, 90, something like that.
I moved out there in 90. Yeah, I moved out there in 90 because I moved to Trenton in 89. So I moved out there in
90. It was like 90 then.
90. We go back to 90. And you also was, we also were supposed to do a podcast years ago.
Right on.
We going on like, that might be like 10 years ago now.
Yeah. About that, about eight.
We met up, we planned it, and for whatever reason, you know, life happened. We didn't do it. We didn't stick to the plan. I think we had the dream team. We actually probably could revive it. I don't know. Everybody's lives are different than they were at that time, but.
You know, I think it's always something that possibly could be revisited because I felt the energy that the sister had. You know, so yeah. We'll see how things work, and then, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, we got the Che Black, the infamous. Could you be the infamous or nah?
I mean, whether I want to be or not, there's definitely I have a certain level of infamy surrounding my name.
Yeah, so give the people a little bit of so we got to act like people don't know. I don't know. We got to act like the listeners don't know. Give me some background history on you. Your parents, where you were raised, how you was raised.
I grew up all over New Jersey. And I spent a lot of centralized of my time was in central New Jersey in Hightstown, East Windsor, with my mother. Mm-hmm. My mother raised me. You know, my father, he was in my life. He passed away when I was 16. He was a Black Panther. So, you know, I had a lot of that type of left-wing socialism, Black power mixture going on in the house as far as like ideology, or at least for my father, you know, being around him, because me and my father were very close. And, you know, like I said, I've been all over New Jersey, originally from North. You know, I still got roots and ties in North. I still, you know, got people and ties in Hightstown. I'm in South Jersey where my mother's from, a side of the family. I got ties out here. So New Jersey is mixed. So there's not a place in New Jersey I'm not familiar with.
Well, were your parents together? You come from a two-family home?
No, my parents separated before I can remember. You know, okay. I think my little brother was just born, and he's 18 months younger than me. So I believe he, you know, and I grew up with just me and him. I have other siblings, but I grew up with just me and my brother.
Yeah, I know. Let me stop acting like I know. Like, I gotta act like the listeners don't know, which is hard. You know what I'm saying? But we all
learn. Like you said, man, I know you, brother. We know each other. Right?
So your father was around though.
Yeah, he was around. He was around up until he passed away. So I would say he passed away when I was 16. So when I was about 15, you know, he was sick, in and out of the hospital, and so you know I didn't spend as much time with him, but you know I was there. And then when I was 16, he passed away and whatnot. You know,
or what he passed away from, if you don't mind saying.
Yeah, cancer. He died of cancer. This was real. It was when, you know, I was 16, so it was a real rough situation to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. What principles your father left you with that you would like to share?
You know, really to be a thinker, hold
on one second. This is gonna... Yo, that's your ringtone, yo.
Yeah, it's real eerie, isn't it? I got the Alfred Hitchcock going to. The Alfred Hitchcock.
So what? Yeah, tell me some of the principles your father left you with.
You know, to really think, to be a thinker. You know, he was big on thinking. His whole thing was you should always be able to, whatever you do, be able to get it done by thinking. You know, he. It's funny because I was talking to my aunt more recently, and she had had grabbed my hands, and she was like, "Oh, your hands is rough." You know, I worked all my life with my hands. I wasn't, you know, and my dad's whole thing was, "I'm not out there breaking my hands. I'm not about to get my hands all rough and rugged when I can sit back and get paid from thinking." So gotcha. His whole thing was, and that's the thing that I think he really instilled in me that I didn't even realize it. And so later on, when I got older, like how much of a thinker I was. Even though I did a lot of dumb shit, I was still thinking about the shit.
Yeah. How was your relationship with your mom?
You know, it was, you know, single mom growing up. You're not trying to hear what mom's telling you. Mom's just trying to do it on her own. She's young. Yeah. You know what I mean? Kind of like, whatever, mom. You know how that go. Whatever, mom. But
yeah,
then you get older and you realize how important your mother is. You know, you realize that that's really all you got. You got mom.
Got you. And your pops is a Black Panther. Talk about that. How did that influence you growing up? Your pops being a Black Panther.
It was like a retro influence.
Okay.
You don't realize it while it's happening in real time. It's like, okay, you're there.
Yeah.
I'm in Brooklyn. I'm selling papers on the corner. I'm 9 years old. I'm in Harlem at a rally.
Yeah, he had you in an army jacket back then?
I mean, I had myself an army jacket back then. You also got to remember the era I grew up in. I was that was my type of energy, like Rambo, Commando. So people were seeing me and thinking, they was looking back then and saying, oh, he was always that Black Power back then. But the reality of it is it was just that whole military army type vibe.
I always tell people
it was a part of pop culture, but I was a part of that part of pop culture growing up. I was the kid, the rent in the woods, you know, face paint and shit like that. So, you know, and I wasn't from the country. Like I would go to the woods and it would be like being a predator or some shit like that to me.
Yeah, you was the first person. Oh, excuse me, you was the first person. I didn't say you was the first person, but like as like, you know, fashion trends come and go, but I remember you had the army jacket and
Yeah, that was like a trademark for me.
Yeah, you had the army jacket. You had an army jacket before Nas said something about the army jacket and then the line.
Exactly. Someone said something to me a couple years back because I had on an army jacket that said something about Nas, and I was like, you must not know, man. Like, I've been doing this, you know, I go too far back. You know what I mean?
But the funny part about it is that you had the army jacket so long. Again, everybody else had regular jackets. I don't even know what was hot back then. Yeah. I'm trying to think what was like the hot brand for people.
You had Carhartts back then.
Yeah. But now you had it before that because you had it like in 90.
Okay, so you had Triple Fat Goose was still relevant back then.
Yeah, Triple Fat.
I think they was doing it. They was doing the Triple Fat Goose was doing the they crossed on.
Yeah, you breaking up.
He's on it now. I don't know if you remember that wave. It was the end of their wave.
Now, what was it? Because you broke up. What was it?
Huh?
What was it? You broke up.
I said, you remember the wave? It was with the Triple Fat, but it was the teams. They started putting the teams on the Triple Fats.
Oh, the teams on Triple Fats?
Yeah. It was the last wave of Triple Fat Goose.
Last wave, yeah.
The last wave. They started throwing the teams. Because I remember I had a Jets one. By the time I had it, the wave was over. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I still had the army jacket. Yeah,
you had the army jacket. Yeah, and one of our mutual friends, I remember he had got kicked out of the crib. I ain't gonna say his name. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's fair.
You got kicked out of the crib, and you know me, I had all the jokes, and he came to school with the he mad taller than us. So to paint the picture, we like at that time we like 5'3", 5'4", if that. Yeah, he like 5'9", 5'10". And he came here.
I felt bad too because it was one of the situations where it was like, I think at the time I had graduated to having a Triple Fat at that time.
Yeah. He had got kicked out of his house. His mom kicked him out.
It was cold. Your brother had to have something.
You sent them to school with the, I guess he came to your crib and you sent them to school with the, with the army jacket on and his sleeves, the sleeves was like at his elbows. Yo.
Now, you know what's fucked up about that whole situation? Y'all probably made fun of him for that.
Yeah. Now, nah, we definitely did.
This is the cruelty. We're exploring the cruelty of kids back then.
I definitely made.
You was up there back then. You could be ruthless back then.
Nah, I was definitely ruthless. You know what I'm saying? And what's funny is like, you know, because I never did with malicious intent. At least I don't think I did. Now, I don't know how it was really. It's hard to say what you was really thinking in the moment 20, 30 years ago. You know what I'm saying? However many years ago that was. But, like, I never made kids – I ain't going to say never. For the most part, I never made fun of somebody with malicious intent. It was always about having fun. But you never know, like, how people was taking it on the other end, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, in hindsight. Like, I don't know, like, who I might have mentally scarred because of a joke or something I said. Like, you know what I'm saying? But – it is what it is, because, I mean, people definitely got at me. My name's Detravius, yo. People got at me about my name, my height. You know what I'm saying? Hey. Back then, I was dark skinned. Like, dark skin wasn't necessary.
I'm sure you had dead complexion.
Huh? I
mean, probably had dead everything. Complexion,
height. Yeah. Complexion, height. I was used to be sick a lot.
You know, you was good, though. You know what I mean? Because you wasn't somebody to fuck with. So it was like, all right, you want to go there?
Yeah.
I might get something off. I might get a couple off. Everybody might start laughing, but
yeah,
that's not how it's going to be remembered.
Yeah.
You might drop a motherfucker in the first round of a fight, but if they air you out by the end of that fight, even if they don't knock you out, it's like, all right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Nah, but you know.
And who felt like getting aired out for 11 rounds after that? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I might get aired out for 11 rounds if you get up.
And it was funny, it's because like when I approach life, like now we much older. And it's like, for me, like whatever I did, like when it came to like defenses and all that, or if I'm going on offense, like I don't know how to go like medium, you know what I'm saying? So I'm gonna go hard, because I don't want you to ever think that you could come back, and I want you to think about you coming back, like think twice about it, you know what I'm saying? Whether it's physical, mental, the jokes, whatever it's gonna be, like, yo, think twice about you before you coming back. Cause that just was my defense mechanism, you know what I'm saying?
Nah, man, I never fucked with you. Man, I never had that real issue. I mean, I caught a couple of jabs. I just took, like, if you hit me with a jab, I just ate it and kept it moving. Yeah. Like, all right, man, I'm gonna roll with it.
Yeah, but before we get on the deep stuff, what you watching? What you said you was watching? You watched the Wu-Tang joint. What was it called? The American Saga?
American Saga, Wu-Tang.
What you thought about it?
Honestly, cinematically, I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was the acting. I thought it was put together good. You know what I mean? I can't wait for season two.
Yo, it was crazy.
As a fan of the Wu-Tang, I had to fact check a lot of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I was really, you know, from the first episode, I was like, come on, man, this is bad.
Yeah.
I'm already knowing who the characters are supposed to be.
Yeah.
So, but fact checking it, you know, it was like any other story. You know what I mean? It was like any other story or any other movie that's put out there. It's going to be facts. And it's going to be story. But I thought it was great, though. I loved it. I can't wait for this next season.
You thought the acting was cool? You liked the acting?
Some of the acting grew on me. However, I'll say this. The RZA character, it took me probably... I don't think he grew on me enough.
Yeah.
Like, he just was weak for me. I will say that. I have to say the RZA character... The actor, he was weak. His portrayal was weak. He was weak. Everybody else, though, I thought that they thing.
I thought the RZA.
I just thought they didn't have enough of everybody else. And I thought that, why wasn't Master Killer there? Why wasn't You God there?
Yeah, You God is weird that You God is completely.
You God, especially being that he's from Staten Island.
From Staten Island. And I just listened to his book recently because I was like, yo, why was You God not in there? But You God is, him and RZA got a lot of issues going on. But they should have been bigger than that and put him in the movie. You know what I'm saying? Because he was saying, like, in his book, he's basically saying, so the book came out before the series. And he was saying, like, basically in the book, he's saying he was there before day one. Like, he knew RZA from way back. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was one of the part of the original crew of people that was making music with him. So.
And I would expect that because he was wet. And so I was always wondering how he ended up around because, like, lyrically, he was the weakest out of all of them. So it was one of the situations like he had to be a day one or something.
Yeah. And he said,
I'm not even saying that to be disrespectful to the dude. Even saying,
you know, they're gonna take it as disrespect.
I apologize when I said he was whack.
Nah, he was whack in the first. You don't got to apologize for that. For the first album, he knew he was whack. I mean, he talked about it in his book. He knew because he said he got locked up in the midst of them recording the album. So he's only on like two songs, and really
only on two songs.
Yeah, really, and Protect Your Neck, he only got, what, four bars, if that?
Four bars.
Yeah, so it kind of sort of like, he talks about it in his book about, you know, him not being around and not being able to, quote unquote, sharpen his sword and all that while they was making the album. But I think later on, he stepped his game up a lot. And I only heard, like, the second album. I never listened to a solo album, none of his projects like that. But he stepped it up a lot in the second album. When you go back into the second album, he on that a lot. The second album, and he got some verses on that second album, for real. And he did all right on the he did out on Cuban Links too. But you're right. He still might be the weakest in the Klan, which is not necessarily a bad thing. You know what I'm saying? Because they had a lot of people on that joint. They all was nice.
They did. And only two of them to me wasn't nice.
Who was the two? You got it. Who else?
Master Killer.
Master Killer.
And I'll say this about Master Killer. In all fairness, when I seen him in the interview, he said that the mystery of shadow boxing was his absolute first rhyme ever wrote. Mm. So, in all fairness with that, I do believe that the progression that he did make from then to even now was great. Like, I think he's a way better MC, and he's actually, like, I've actually heard verses from him. I was like, yeah, that was nice. But as far as the other MCs go, he's definitely not as polished or skilled, or he's even as memorable as he is. You know what I mean? Because really, people only know three or four members of the group, if you want to be honest. Prison, Raekwon, Ghost, Method Man.
Yeah.
Outside of that, let's be honest. Motherfuckers don't know who Method Man is.
It's not, especially after the first album. I mean, if you wasn't around, if you knew to the Wu-Tang, like, Inspector Deck never really got his chance to do his thing.
27 years ago.
Yeah.
27 years ago.
Yeah.
That first album dropped.
Yeah. So you said it's RZA. People know RZA, Meth, Ghost. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you're right.
That's who they know. So anybody else, there's no disrespect to the rest, because people like Jizza, Foundational, you know what I mean? Old Dirty. Well, they know Old Dirty. I take that back. Also Old Dirty. I gotta add Old Dirty to that.
Yeah.
Old Dirty Bastard. So five. Out of nine people, you got five that everybody knows who they are. If I say their names, you can associate them with Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah.
There's other people, if I say their name, like for example, if I say Killer Sin, you might say Wu-Tang Clan. Nah, that's Killer On. Yeah. But you don't even know. You won't know the difference between him and the Master Killer.
Yeah. I never got into the auxiliary groups. I mean, I did get into Grave Diggers, but Grave Diggers was early on it. But outside of that,
killed the Wu-Tang Clan.
Huh?
Wu-Tang Clan is the greatest rap group of all time, and the auxiliary groups is what destroyed their dynasty.
Yeah.
I won't say their dynasty. Well, I guess you could say dynasty, but it really destroyed their stronghold on the game and shortened their dynastic period. Because they had a dynastic period and it got shortened. You know, I would say from 1993 to 1998, they ruled hip-hop.
Yeah.
Regardless of everything else going on, when they made their stamp, every time they came around, you knew what it was.
Yeah.
They tell you the only time you ever seen a symbol grace the cover of a magazine.
Yeah, and they had a I completely agree with that. I will use is watered down because of the auxiliary groups, because they put out way too much. And you, ironically, you the guy talks about this in the book. They put out way too much product under the Wu-Tang banner with RZA Beats and them MCs that came around. They just, honestly, I don't know if they was nice or not, because I never really got into them beyond the singles. But it definitely was like, yo, they didn't stamp their stamp in your memory as they should have been. You know what I'm saying? Coming under that.
And the real issue was they did that before every last member of the Wu was even released.
You guys talked about that in this book.
Well, I'm sure he did, because RZA never wanted to release You Guys out. Yeah. And I never read You Guys' book, but I'm pretty sure I have somewhat of an idea of his point of view on the whole subject, or at least where his stances, at least to a degree. Because the truth is, RZA didn't want to put out his project. He knew that nobody really was interested in that project. And it became an issue of You God really pushing and getting his project coming out, and then saying, well, shit, Ghostface put out two projects on top of the fact that I thought that him and Ray was putting out a project together, and that meant that I would at least come before Ghostface, because that's like them both having a project out. Now Ghost puts out a project, and now both of them have two projects. I haven't dropped once. Capadonna wasn't even an original member. He dropped a fucking project. Wait a minute. How the hell is Killer Priest dropping the album? You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I'm pretty sure You Guys, and I didn't read the book, but I'm pretty sure You Guys had, like, all of those things was in You Guys' mind. Because just me as a fan of the Klan, watching it in real time, these were questions that was even in my mind. Like, What's going on with Inspector Deck?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he was dope to me. And he wasn't, you know, he was in the back. So what's up with Deck? You know, and is You God and Master Killer even, are they even on the plate? Like, are they even on the menu?
Yeah. Now, he definitely talked about all that, what you just said. He talked about all of that in the book. So, I mean, but as a fan, we was all thinking that anyway. So, he just basically said what we was thinking about as a fan. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Everything I just said, I never read the book, but it's just all based off of real time, knowing things, and then just hearing some of the beeps after it, you know, after the fact. And yeah. Then, you know, like, I've been doing video shit for a while, so I've come across a lot of fringe Wu members, actual Wu members, and just, you know, close affiliates and associates.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, we're going, speaking of the Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang's the greatest rap group of all time, only probably behind, behind them probably would be, you would have to say, Run-DMC and Public Enemy.
You can argue where Outkast rank.
Outkast would probably rank number 5 behind N.W.A.
Okay. I am really mad at that list.
And the list can be, you know, there's certain spots. N.W.A. you can argue could be 3, maybe 2, maybe, just because of what the members did after that. But as a collective, I have to only judge the groups as what they did as a collective.
Yeah.
And as a collective, with only 2 albums, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, as a collective, yeah, yeah. Now I got you.
Definitely, to me, you can't put them less than 3. You can argue them 1, you can argue them 2, I got them at 3. But the argument to be made for them at 1 or 2, Run-DMC, Innovators, what they did, you gotta put them in the top.
The Tribe Called Quest ranks.
Tribe Called Quest. Off the top of my head, I would probably say somewhere around 7 or 8.
7 or 8.
Of groups. And this is after me really looking at it, because I wasn't a huge fan of theirs, but after, like, getting the opportunity to do behind-the-scenes shows with them, after Life was gone, of course. You know, before, you know, about 2 years ago, I was in California when they was getting up to do a tour that they ended up not doing. I got to be backstage with them at a couple of their events. And they were at a festival, as a matter of fact. And just hearing the songs and the impact, remembering the impact that Tribe Called Quest had. To not have them in the top 10, I can see someone having them somewhere maybe in the top 15. But
gotcha. Top 10, and that would be hard. Anybody that don't have them in the top 10, I would want to hear their list.
Yeah, yeah. But, because someone who wouldn't have them in the top 10, I could see their list being a real regional-based list.
Yeah, like, it would have to be like, yeah. Hey,
you know, names like that and
8-Ball and MJG. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. These are the type of names that I think would be on list of people who don't have them in their top 10.
Yeah.
Just because they're younger and didn't have a New York influence.
Got you.
Other than that, Tribe Called Quest definitely, to me, is in the top 10. I was rounding out around 8, maybe 9.
Yeah, sound like that.
You know, because you got other groups, too, that, you know, you look at, you know, where does Mobb Deep place? You know, where does, I just had them at the tip of my tongue. Well, you said Outkast. What is Outkast for? I could sit with Outkast place. But, yeah. You know, there's a lot of groups. You look at, what are these groups place? You know. Top 10 is real. What do you say? Yeah, it's real.
Subjective. I mean, all of it is subjective at the end of the day.
It's hard not to be based on what you like. It's hard not to say, well, I'm so attached to this, or I remember this because it was attached to my childhood. It was attached to this part of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, so sometimes we over-exaggerate the importance of a project because of how important it was to us personally.
Yeah.
A Sheep in Wolf's Clothing is one of my personal favorite albums. I think it's one of the best albums ever. However, if someone asked me the top 3 albums of all time, I wouldn't mention that. Because the impact that album had, it doesn't categorize greatness. See, there's a difference between what I think is the best. Because the best is you asking me what I like the best.
Yeah.
When you say greatness, there has to be a criteria. And I think impact, I think... What is it? Impact. I'm lost my words right now. Shit. Then cookie out here.
Huh?
I said I'm lost for words right now. I was trying to find my words.
You said impact. It got to be impact. I think I'm echoing. I hope this audio came out good.
I said impact. You gotta look at the quality. You know what I'm saying?
Body of work gotta come into play.
The influence.
Influence gotta come into play. Yep.
Influence has to come into play as far as just even like how you influence the game, which is part of how you impact the game. You know what I mean? Notoriety. How big was your project? You could have a slept on classic. There's a difference between a slept on classic and an actual classic.
Actual classic, yes.
It's something that the material was classic. You know, you got what you call classic material. However, did it reach classic status? Because did it hit the vein of what was going on? Like, was it a theme for that moment? Mm-hmm. Did it capture that moment? You know, when you think of albums like Infamous, Illmatic, they captured that moment. What's that? The Purple Tape captured the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go back, 1988, the greatest year in hip hop, mm-hmm. as far as projects for projects. You're talking Road to the Riches. You're talking Long Live the King. You know, you're talking Life is Too Short on the West Side of Things. Mm-hmm. You know, 1988. You know, impactful year. You're talking Heavy D and the Boys. You know, we're talking a lot of the
Eric EPMD B and came out 88 too, right? EPMD.
We're talking Eric B and Rakim. We're talking Eric B. EPMD. This is EPMD. All 1988, and these were all memorable albums. We're not talking about the album that people didn't like it in. We're talking about the classic shit.
Yeah, EPMD definitely came out in 88, I believe, the first album. Yep.
So when you think about 1988. That was the most, and I think the second 88 was probably 96.
You know, 96, like, that was what? Reasonable Doubt?
That was Reasonable Doubts. That was Illmatic. That was Reasonable Doubts. It Was Written. Helter Skelter, Operation Lockdown. There was a few other gems that year. I can't, but 96.
96
was another.
96 was a great year, man. Great year in hip-hop.
95 going into 92.
95. I think I just lost you. Yep, I just lost you. I lost you for a hot second.
I said 96. I was saying, you know, Ghostface Killer, Iron Man 96. 96 was a good year.
Switching gears a little bit because I know we don't got all the time in the world. But thanks again for taking the time out to do this. So, you've been following what you've been. I know you've been following what's going on in the black community right now, as far as police brutality.
I've been going on in the black community for a long time.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you know, I know this, but listener might not know this.
No, I'm saying that for the listeners. That's not for you.
Yeah.
For the listeners.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, I'm not somebody just talking about shit.
Yeah, and you've been on the front lines of a lot of things. So what are your thoughts on what's going on now with the rioting, with the protesting, the looting?
I would say this. We don't gain nothing from rioting and looting. I don't think that that's the right path. I don't think that we should be out there and just taking that energy and just destroying shit, being destructive. But I'm not going to sit there and chastise and berate those who are out there expressing their anger and their frustration in ways that I guess they feel that that's how they know how to do it or can do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to point fingers and tell people why they're not doing why they didn't go after police or whatnot. Hold on one second. Please pick it up. Yeah. There are people asking the question, why aren't they attacking the police like that? This and that. I'm not here to sit there and judge or question people's actions and how they're doing it. But I do think that we need to take the time out and come with solutions because this is not something that's new. It's something that's old. It's been happening. I think that the energy is a little bit different right now because people seem to be a little bit more upset and a little bit more sad at the same time. Mm-hmm. I don't like the sadness part, but I think the upsetness part is the part that we could use to get frustrated and upset enough to make change. Because upset people change situations. You know, you get upset, you I'm tired of this shit. I'm not doing it. I'm not getting fed up. I'm changing my situation. I get sad, I might sulk and sit back and just cry about shit. You know what I mean? And I don't want to see us crying.
Yeah.
So if I have to see us upset to do get shit done, I'd rather see us upset to get shit done.
Yeah, I was telling the people I've been talking to about it, because I've been unplugged. I unplugged from on my own personal mental state. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't,
I've been unplugged. It's crazy, but go ahead.
You said what?
I said, I've been unplugged. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. You've been unplugged. Yeah, you've been unplugged for a minute. So I had to unplug because it just, I don't think the human brain is built to deal with all these opinions and all that coming at you at the same damn time. You know what I'm saying? And all like, but the input's like, I don't think the human, well, I know for a fact the human brain is probably not developed enough to have 24 access, 365, 24/7. You know what I'm saying? 24/7, 365 access to being quote unquote on to the outside world. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so for me, I have to be diligent going forward with controlling what I'm letting come and putting in my body. You know what I'm saying? Because I think it all matters. You know what I'm saying? But the talk of the people, because I've been kind of sort of unplugged a little bit, but talking to people and having conversation with people, a lot of people share the same sentiment that you share, that if it was different this time. Like,
because it is.
Yeah.
I think if people can see it.
Yeah, and if it was different, which hopefully that translate into, like you said, the long-term solutions. Like, so what's next? So, like, if you was to give like, some...
I don't see any...
opinions on what's next. Or I practical think, next steps.
I think that Rodney King felt different as well.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I've seen the result after Rodney King. This reminds me of Rodney King because it's the second time that I've seen this type of outrage. Mm-hmm. Although the outrage of Rodney King didn't happen until the verdict was read, because it was like, oh, we got him this time. That's what really had Rodney King people fucked up, because with Rodney King, it was like, we got proof now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they didn't. You know, but I don't see anything different unless somebody is really giving solutions. And these solutions are being followed through, unless we're really working solution-based and applicable ideas. Because I don't hear a lot of shit being applicable. I hear a lot of rhetoric. I hear a lot of shit that's being regurgitated, that's been said. I hear a lot of venting. I hear a lot of people just expressing their opinions and their thoughts. And a lot of them have good and great thoughts and opinions. And a lot of them, I feel their frustration when they vent. However, that's not where we should be at right now. We need to really... If we want to, like, I don't really have time to hear that right now. I have time to listen to like minds who want to, you know, build and create and move forward and come with some solutions.
So what be your solution? You want to get solution or strategy or tactic that you think that people should implement or try? I guess implement means the same thing as try. Going forward.
I've been subscribed to Pan African for years. Mm-hmm. My father was a Pan Africanist as well.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, I think that our situation needs to be made completely global. I think that our plight needs to be taken on an international level. And I think that we need to really, really push an international agenda and really create a lot of propaganda and express ourselves to the world to say that, look, our human rights as black people are being violated by America.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Malcolm X in 1964, before he was killed, had the right idea. Shortly after that, he was killed. The last person who said anything like that, I believe, was Malcolm X. And we see what happened to him. So I do believe that nobody wants to speak on this because of that. However, I believe that now is the time. I don't think that we will get a victory inside the UN by bringing a petition to the UN, but I believe that the energy and attention that we do by making this a world stage issue, this is an issue that needs to be on conversations at world summits, the treatment of black people in America by America. This needs to be discussed at world count, like I said, world summit meetings and things of that nature. And this needs to be a conversation that's being had against, I mean, being had amongst world leaders, you know, amongst themselves about what's going on over here. And we need to look and see, because, you know, I've heard that we have new friends several times. However, when I look across the map, the globe, I see that we have family. So now I think it's time we appeal to our family. And then when I say family as a Pan-African, I look at us as global Africans. So we need to start reaching out to our brothers and sisters globally, whether it's in Brazil, whether it's in London, whether it's in Australia, wherever our brothers and sisters be at, the Caribbean. You know, I think that that's one of the biggest things we need to do. I don't think it's the only thing, the only solution, but I think that attention and that noise, that energy, that international noise, I think that's what we need.
What's ironic about it, it's on the UN's radar anyway, because the UN releases a report. It's called the UN report on something. I studied in the law school, but they actually released reports and state like what the US is doing wrong to Black people in their report, and the US has to respond to it. The problem with the UN is that they don't have any power to do anything. So everything that they put in this paper, this report, is a recommendation. So it's like they have no standing. So, but there can be, just, I didn't think about this before we had this conversation. I think there can be a unified front from the ground that's not there, because that's just the UN doing it, right? So that's right. Something that we can do. We like, all right, we got this organization over here. We got this economic system over here that's feeding this organization to push that thing forward. Because right now we don't like the media. We are the media. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the word I'm looking for? There's no a person that's there is, right? Because YouTube owns YouTube, right? Google owns YouTube, so they can censor you, and, you know, Twitter owns, I don't know who owns
it. The reality of it is the competition of real time, of somebody with a camera in their hand.
Exactly.
Uploading that in real time, that getting out. See, the information, like, they own it, but the fact that you can get it out that quick, that before they realize what you just put up. So the reality of it is just like you said, they're competing. Yep. So there is no more media, because now everybody is the media. As long as you have it. A phone in your hand.
Yeah, everybody's a reporter right now. Literally, everybody's a reporter, whether we know it or not. Like, when we tweet, we're reporting on something. Exactly. When we make an Instagram post, we're reporting on something. We make a Facebook post, we are reporting on something. So we are the media. We actually are stronger than the media. Actually, social media is really what pushes culture for better and worse, right? So it's like, I think there definitely has to be an economic part, because we can't do it without no money.
I think that's the thing that is the domestically what needs to be the main focus.
Domestically being the economic power.
I think it's a two-pronged thing that we need to be focused on. One is making our plight an international plight and making our voice heard internationally. And I think that in the meantime, domestically, we need to be setting ourselves with economic empowerment, financial freedom.
Financial freedom. And what we're saying is not new. Shit been written about for years. I ain't gonna say hundreds of years, but the first time I read about it was in, not the first time I read about it, but the oldest book I could think of that talked about it was actually The Miseducation of Negro. And I think that was published in 1936 or something like that.
Carter G.
Yeah, Carter G was talking about economic empowerment and political empowerment and social empowerment. He was talking about that. But actually, I'm lying. Booker T. Washington has a series of, I don't know if it was actually published in real time as the book, but later on he had this, the book is called, I'm going to get the book to you and the readers. The book is basically a collection of, so he used to give speeches to Tuskegee every,
I actually know what you're talking about. Yeah. It wasn't released as a book in real time or as a series of collected books in real time, but it was made a collected.
Yeah.
Collected and made into a book. Yeah. I actually haven't read it, but I know what you're speaking on, though.
It was called, it's going to come to me before the podcast is over, hopefully. But it basically is a collection of the speeches he used to give, and he talked about economic empowerment, social empowerment. But he was more on the economic vibe, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, we got to do for self, basically. You know what I'm saying? And but yeah, he, like you just said, I don't think it was released in real time. I think it was years later they collected his speeches or wherever he was at and put them out. I don't even know what year it was published, but basically, so I mean, these conversations been being had. So it's just really like, I think we got to stop having the same conversation. Well, we need to have the same conversations, but we also need to be pushing that action forward. And like, I'm willing to work with anybody that's willing to work with me. I don't necessarily have to agree with the politics, your social stances like that. But like, I think if you're trying to better black people, holler at me. I'm sure they can holler at you. You know what I'm saying? But like,
I think this is where the conversation gets a little interesting for listeners.
Yeah. It's going to get...
What about disagree? I agree to a degree.
Where you disagree at? With?
On one side of me, it's like, and I remember...
Let me rewind, though, before you go, because I know where you're going, because we talk about this all the time. So I ain't going to say any political belief I'm with, and I'm not going to say any social belief I'm with, but the common ones, the more... they put it like this. I don't care if you're conservative or... Whether you conservative or you liberal or Democrat or Republican, that's where I'm
going. Black Lives Matter.
Go ahead. I know you're gonna go there.
I'm not even gonna beat around the bush, but I was about to get elaborate and get cute with it and play with it, but Black Lives Matter. How do you feel about Black Lives Matter, my brother?
Honestly, I don't even feel nothing about them because I don't follow them. You know what I'm saying? So I know like so what
you know about them.
So I'm gonna tell you. So this is my complete, I'm going to be transparent, as they would say, with my bias.
As black people, holistically, I understand the need to say we are all the black family. And so the inclusion of the black family is usually a given in a lot of that. For example, one of the big things that Black Lives Matter started out, and one of the big things their agenda was homosexual black lives, trans black lives. In fact, they started off as a non-heterosexual trans movement, if you get to the basis of how they started. Now, I'm only saying that because this is like, what we're dealing in is we're dealing in separation now, because we're saying this is what's important over this. Mm-hmm. We've always had homosexuals amongst us in our movements. And the reason being why we've always had homosexuals amongst our movements, and I believe personally, I wasn't them, and I can't say maybe they feel like they was being whatever pressured. Mm-hmm. But the reason why we didn't have these issues is because the understanding was that we're a holistic black people trying to make things right for us holistically as black people.
Yeah.
The agenda is not anything outside of being black, because the issue that we're dealing with is not anything else outside of being black. When you start to run down the names of the people who have been murdered by police, the one thing I've noticed that they had in common was that they were all listed as heterosexual. I'm not saying that they was targeted because they was heterosexual, that they weren't killed because they weren't homos. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. What I'm saying is that the threat of a black homosexual male is not the same as the threat of me. Mm-hmm. This is not what America sees as a threat. Mm-hmm. A homosexual black male is not a threat to white America or the white American power structure, regardless of how you feel about the being gay or not. It has nothing to do with that. Yeah. So this was not something that was put in the front. What was put in the front is black people and the advancement and the equality of black people. Black Lives Matter was recently at the LGBT Pride in Toronto and tried to hijack the Pride. parade.
And where they was where?
In Toronto. They tried to hide that Pride parade. This is online. People YouTube this shit. Now, I'm bringing that up to say that what was their purpose of feeling like they weren't included? They felt like because they weren't invited as an entity to be represented, I guess because they didn't have a float, what they decided to do was drive a truck in the middle of the parade and make a big fuss at the parade about Black Lives Matter. Why are we up in this?
What parade? What parade was it?
The Gay Pride Parade.
In Toronto. Gay Pride Parade in Toronto. Okay, I missed that part. I think you went out. So I gotta check that out. I gotta plug back in just for that. So there was a Gay Pride Parade in Toronto, and Black Lives Matter basically crashed it.
They basically crashed the parade. Because they wasn't invited and they didn't have a float that was going to ride down the road, they decided to ride their truck in the middle of the parade and park it there and get on their bullhorns and start with their Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, and I also think there's confusement. Is that a word? Confusion in the community.
That's all right. We do that time to time.
Confusion. Yeah.
So get fly with it.
Yeah. I'm definitely not one of these words snobs. There's some I think there needs to be, I don't even know if people know there's like cause there's the hashtag thing, cause even like the Black Lives Matter, like the leadership be like, yo, we don't have nothing to do with the hashtag. But they y'all do though. You know what I'm saying? Like they on record saying like we don't have nothing to do with the hashtag. Like one of them is definitely on record saying like the hashtag is something different from the actual movement, but that's to me, like as from a branding, not to sound corporate or anything, but from a branding standpoint, that's like saying like, that's like Coke saying like, if it's a Coca-Cola, you know what I'm saying? Hashtag is different than a Coke, the brand.
See, the reason being is because, you know what I mean? Coke can take responsibility for their branding. You understand what I'm saying? What it is, they don't want you to know that. All right, bottom line is this. Ferguson made the branding of Black Lives Matter. Ferguson created Black Lives Matter. Now, Black Lives Matter was created in the wake of Trayvon Martin, Zimmerman situation.
Yeah.
So that's where they was created. This was back in, like, I think, what, 14 or 16? I can't remember one of them.
Yeah.
That's when they was actually created. Now, they gained their traction, though, with Ferguson. So I believe it was 14 they was created, and 16 they really got their traction. Uh-huh. And it was based off of all the money that they received during that Ferguson, and it was based off of the chants and the shouts of Black Lives Matter and the hashtags that the people coming out of Ferguson were using, because to them, as the people out there being motivated, and for those who don't know, I did an interview. I did my own media thing. Like you said, we the media, but I did my own thing out there. I did an interview with the brother, Darren Seals. Mm-hmm. The interview is still on YouTube.
Send me the link so I can put it in the show notes.
I'll send you the link, but if you go to about 2 minutes into the link, you know what I'm saying? Or maybe a little bit more than that, but go about 2 minutes into the link. You know, we talk about Black Lives Matter and their involvement during Ferguson, the Mike Brown situation. And this is from a brother who was on the front line. He was there from the beginning. So what I'm telling you was from when I was out there with this brother. And I've been out there with the brother a couple of times. He was murdered a few years back mysteriously, you know, shortly after exposing Black Lives Matter. That's another story, though. You're not going to get spooky with it. However, you know, that was.
So what did he say, though? But what did he say? Give us a taste of what he said.
Yeah, basically he said that, you know, the energy was out there. The people to keep the energy, you know, you got slogans, you got sayings going on to get the crowd, keep them electrified or whatever. And it started, you know, different things. No justice, no peace. Uh-huh. Black Lives Matter, you know. Hands up, don't shoot. He said these became things that they were just hearing and the crowd was just running with. After a while, that you said anything, the crowd was going to basically repeat. But okay. Black Lives Matter was one of the things that really stayed, and he didn't even know that it was a movement or an organization until after the steam and the momentum, and that became the main theme When the main theme became Black Lives Matter, that's when he basically this shit. Oh, y'all are an actual movement. There's a movement called Black Lives Matter. We just thought we was chanting this shit. So now they're introducing, now they're being introduced to the actual movement, not knowing who these people really are or what they represent. You know what I'm saying? Or who's behind them. They just know they're out there in the field. They get down with them. So now they down with them side by side, and now they're gaining all this money. But all the money is coming through Black Lives Matter. Yeah. Black Lives Matter, all this money.
So that's where what's name got caught up, jammed up, right? With the dude with the blue vest, right? Wasn't he part of them?
Who's that out of Baltimore? Who's that?
D-Ray, I think that's his name. D-Ray?
Out of Baltimore, D-Ray.
He from Baltimore?
Yeah, out of Baltimore. My man had an issue with D-Ray. D-Ray Mickerson or whatever his name is.
Yeah, so that's when he got jammed up with the funding, right? They were saying?
I believe this is actually, this is before all of this. My man was talking about it.
Okay.
He got killed. Like I said, this happened with My man was talking about this before all of this shit happened.
Yeah.
Well, he was breaking this shit down. I did the interview with him. He actually was killed before the interview was released.
Oh, wow. And so you released it after
he was killed.
Wow, I got to check that out. Yeah, send me the link so I can put it in the show notes. But speaking of interviews, switching gears a little bit, but not really. Yeah, we switching gears.
Real quick, last thing. They took the money after everything was said and done. Mm-hmm. People who don't know about them, contact Mike Brown's dad. Ask what's going on with that Mike Brown fund. What happened with all the money that they got for that? How they put that shit up? And I don't even know if it's still open at this point because the foundation, the Mike Brown Foundation, the center that they created for him. I don't know what happened, but they did all this money, did all that, and when they left, the money left.
Got you. So, the listeners, reach out to Mike Brown Pops. I'm pretty sure you can find him on some type of social media. We live in the internet age, so he's somewhere. Exactly.
People talk all that shit. Do the work behind it. Prove it. Go behind the work. I do the research myself. I've been doing this shit 30
years. So you've been interviewing for years. So that's what I'm saying. Switching gears, but not really switching gears.
Switching gears. I've been doing the interview thing
for years. That's a bar right there. I just gave you a bar. You know I taught you how to rap, yo.
Man, he taught me how to rap.
So
I was the nicest motherfucker you knew in high school.
I don't know. I think I was, but that's another conversation. Huh?
If you're gonna be honest, I was the nicest motherfucker you knew.
But you was nice outside of me.
I like that. That was cute.
You was nice outside of me. For our age group, you was up there. I told you that before. Well, obviously we gotta talk like we don't talk, like, right?
You told me that back then.
I told you. But I told you that before.
I don't know if it was because you was putting me on the spot or not, but you told me that back then.
Nah, I told you that. I told you that recently. Like, you was one of the nicest. And for our age group, you know, between 3 years ahead, 3 years behind, you was the nicest. But outside, I always think I'm the nicest.
Of course, you know, you got different leagues and levels. Like I said, there's levels to this shit, but
a lot of them was trash.
Amongst the peers, and yeah, right, it wasn't like I was dealing with a bunch of, it wasn't like the NBA 90s.
Now, what I'm saying, you was nice. What I'm saying is, it was a lot of trash people out there that thought they was nice, but that's another conversation too. That, you know what I'm saying? Like, because everybody think they nice. That's why everybody make raps, you know what I'm saying? Because everybody think they can rap.
Absolutely. But go ahead, you guys about the interview.
Yeah, switch your gears. Because you was the first person, I think you know where I'm going with it. You was the first person that I know. Matter of fact, you may have the first interview with
my man. My man couldn't even attract flies to a dump.
Yo, let me say it first, yo.
I know, go ahead.
Yeah. So you was the first person. This was years ago. This might have been like 10 years ago now, yo. So you sent me this. You sent me this link.
2009.
So you sent me this link.
2010 it came out, but the end of 2009, I did it.
Yeah, so you sent me this link of this brother. Yeah, and you was like, I don't even know if the interview was out yet. You might have still been editing it.
You got the pre. You got the pre-version.
I got the pre-joint. So I probably got to go back. Now, I think I did watch the official joint that you released because we was laughing about it because the way he was talking. And I was like, he paused every time he think he said something deep. And we like, so you sent me this link of this brother. He was like, yo, I just think I heard an echo. Is echo on your end?
No, I don't even know echo.
So you sent me this link of this brother and you was like, yo, like he talking that shit. He gonna be somebody. He might be somebody. I like the way he talking, and I I think this is the first video that I ever seen him on. Personally, the first video. I never heard of the dude until you sent me the link to the brother. And I'm pretty sure this is the oldest interview with him out there that's out there.
Nobody heard him before that.
Huh?
Nobody heard him before that.
Nobody heard him before that. And the brother we talking about is Dr. Umar Johnson. Yes, sir. So, yes, sir. You still following the dude? Or how do you feel about him now? What's your thoughts on him?
I never followed, per se, the dude. But, you know, that was my big bro at one point.
All right, now go ahead. So what were you saying? He was like, you had a lot of big homies in the game.
I had a lot of big homies in the game coming up, you know, big brothers and whatnot. Divine Allah. You know, it's crazy because I don't speak to none of them, but it's not beef with a lot of them. Like, Divine Allah, that's still big, bro. And it's not that I don't speak to him. I haven't spoken to him, that's all. Uh-huh. But Divine Allah is probably one of the realest. He should be the leader of all of this shit right now, personally. Like, uh-huh. I don't follow anybody, but if there's a movement, he should be a leader. You know what I mean?
Divine Allah, I got to check him out. I'm not familiar.
That's just how I feel about him, because he just has the mannerism, the intelligence, and the, like, being around his brother, his humility. Like, I could try to be like him, but I just, my temperament, just the person that I am, wouldn't even, I'm too much of that. Maybe when I get older, but.
Yeah, so you talking about Divine Allah.
Yeah, Divine Allah, great brother. But Umar Johnson, yeah. The brother that, I did that interview. Let's talk about that. I did that interview.
You did that interview. The reason I'm asking you that, I mean, this ain't no gotcha question. That's not the purpose of this podcast. But the reason I asked you.
Now, what I think about him from then, what I thought he was going to be then, but what now?
Yeah. How did you take this? Talk about his trajectory from your perspective. Because at the time you sent it, like I said, this is 2009, 2008, 2009. When you sent it to me, he was like, yo, like, this is going to be that guy, basically. You know what I'm saying? And he took off. He took off after that.
I wasn't lying.
He took off after that.
Yeah. I seen it from our first conversation.
Yeah.
I got the interview with him. And then shortly after that, he did an interview with Sinetta. And then after
Sinetta connect. Because he had, or he has, quote unquote, Sinetta.
And in all fairness, the Sinetta interview was what really catapulted him to where he ended up at. Because that's where, you know, he took flight from, that platform.
Gotcha.
But my interview with him, he's probably got a million fucking views now. It was 250,000 views a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
But that was the first interview I did, period, that I was really awesome. I'm doing these interviews and I'm taking...
Oh, that was your first interview too?
That was my first serious interview.
Like, serious interview.
If I did anything before that, I don't take it serious. You can't find it.
Okay.
So that was what I took serious. And I looked at it like, it was really, and I didn't want to do, the only reason I did the interview is because I was working on a documentary. This is the funny part about it. I was working on a documentary and I did the interview for the documentary. After that, I was just like, you know what? I feel like he got a lot to say. And he actually said some shit that I wanted to challenge. He mentioned how homosexuality and white supremacy is linked. And so if you watch the interview, you know the interview, I actually asked him that question. I was really challenging him to see if he can make that connection and prove what he was saying. Because I didn't see how that would be a possible connection to make. So I think it was his response to that question that really made me look at him differently. Because it was how he responded, the way he responded, and the fact that I seen how articulate and erudite he was with his words and mannerisms that I'm like, yo, this brother right here is sharper than the motherfucking mosquito's needle right here. So
yeah,
he's definitely somebody to really look out for, because he's going to be somebody on the lecture circuit, because his oration skills is outrageous.
His oration skill was crazy. I guess it's still crazy. But the reason I asked...
Look where he's at now, though.
Yeah. So it seemed like a couple videos that I've seen seemed like he might be dealing with... I mean, I know you can't speak on a brother's health. Seemed like he might be experiencing a little mental break, it seems like.
I mean, you're talking about a brother who probably turns around and looks and sees no friends at every corner. That he turns around and looks at. You know what I mean? And it's been like that for a while for the brother. You know what I mean? Whether it's dealing with genuine haters, dealing with the government and these devils that you up against. And then, you know, the shit that he done created, the situations that he done created, you know?
Yeah. So the school.
The school, ooh, yeah.
What about the school? What about the school? What's with that?
Yo, check it out. Baba Baruti down, the Baruti family, him and his wife, they have a school down in the Akabin Academy, the Akabin Institute, I mean, down in Atlanta, Georgia. You want to donate to black schools or black institutes, Q Butter, the Zyx Institute, XYAYX in Brooklyn. Q Butter got that shit. Mark Klein in Chicago. Uh-huh. We got schools. You got the brother Baye in Trenton. We got schools. But continue. I apologize. The school.
Baye got a school?
Baye got a school. At least he did. If he don't, he need to get another one.
Baye, what's his last name?
Kemen. Baye Kemen.
Oh, I don't know that Baye. I'm thinking of a different Baye.
It might be the same Baye, because I don't even know if that's his legitimate last name. I'm like going off of Facebook name.
Yeah, he got a bald head.
He used to have locks.
Locks. Nah, I don't
know if he does now. I don't think I know he doesn't now.
Nah, this is a different Baye, but Baye, the Baye I'm thinking of, I ain't gonna put his last name out there. The Baye I'm thinking of, he's involved in
he's in Trenton.
Nah, he's from Newark.
Okay, now this Baye's out there in Trenton. He's
in Trenton. Oh, Trenton. Baye, what's his last name?
Baye, I believe it's Kemet.
What's the name of his school?
It used to be the Garvey, Marcus Garvey
school. Oh, yeah. I absolutely know what school you're talking about. I know what
school. Yeah, I forgot to even plug the name. The Marcus Garvey School, Garvey Academy.
I know a couple people, parents that put their kids in that school. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So salute.
I think it still exists. I think it's still in business.
Salute to these brothers right there. You know, we don't have to start trying to build schools up from the ground. We can build what we already done started. Help the people that done started it, because these people need your help.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, as far as the school that Umar is got, you see the building. It's over there in Delaware.
Yeah.
Just raggedy as hell. Like, I'm not here to disrespect. Like, there's no disrespect. Like, I know Umar hearing this and seeing that. Umar is going to feel some type of way, like, oh, because certain people, you got to be real mindful of what you say. But at the end of the day, it's like, motherfucker, I haven't spoken to you in almost a decade now, chick. We want to get technical.
Yeah.
A homeboy of mine was like, yeah, man, Chase Black, that's my man, standing third. I guess he didn't know that we had spoken. His response was, well, that's my man. We came up together.
Yeah.
I didn't know what he meant by came up together.
Yeah.
Because I'm not from Philly.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what he meant by that. But I did after a while. I was like, okay, he meant we was on the come up. Because at the time, his name was there.
But that was your first interview. And that, like I said, that's the first interview that I seen him.
Wow, we did come up together. Our names, honestly, for a while, our names was connected. But honestly, you know, I don't even know of a man that he ain't the type of brother that you riding with him, period, anyway. So it wasn't that type of situation where that's my man, and you know, we run together. That was the situation where we worked together, and I thought it was going to be more work, you know what I mean? Because that was the agreement. But yo, when that brother took off, when he got into that place where you were like that superstar place,
yeah,
you know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about, with that Breakfast Club space,
yeah.
Like, shortly before he got, well, actually, no, when he got to that space, I couldn't get him on the phone no more. I still had his number. I couldn't get him on the phone no more. Yeah, you know I mean, my text is there. At least I used to get the text response. I wasn't even getting it, you know. But I think a lot of that also had to do with a relationship that I had with somebody else that he didn't really fuck with. And I didn't know their backstory.
Yeah.
And that became a good friend of mine. And I didn't know that they had a bad backstory, or at least a backstory where they didn't fuck with each other. And I found out semi early, but by then it was like, man, it ain't that serious to me.
Yeah, but you never know. Human beings are human beings, and they're going to.
And some men are bitches. You know what I mean? Yeah. Some men are soft. You know what I mean?
They're going to be emotional. People going to have emotional. Say, I don't take nothing personal. Like, you don't call me. You don't call me. What you, Negro Pen? You don't call me.
Negro Pen before?
Yeah, you call me Negro Pen. You call me Negro
Pen. That was a good one.
Yeah, that was a good one. You call me another good one. But I don't take nothing personal, man. Because at the end of the day.
Man.
Huh?
I don't take it personal either.
Now, at first, I know I could get you on the phone, right? So that helps. But I mean, even if people are strangers, I can't, you know what I'm saying? Because I have my own thoughts and I'm not consistent with my.
I wild out a couple of times. I came to your man crib one time, man.
Huh?
I came to your homeboy crib one time.
Cool.
Your man.
We ain't going to talk about that.
We don't do that.
Yeah.
I came to his crib the one time. It's because it's like, it should be funny.
Yeah.
Like, all right. let's see how funny you get. I'm a comedian sometimes.
Yeah. Nah, I remember that. I definitely remember that.
Yeah, I'm a comedian.
But yeah, but let's cause we gotta get up out of here. We know I'm talking.
All right,
let's get people real deal, practical, what you can do now, what you could do next, what you could do in the future, steps that they could take.
In regards to
Black power and movement. Black empowerment, self-empowerment, however you want to define it.
I think that as far as Black empowerment goes, I think that we need to look at our communities. I think we need to start in our communities, and I think that it needs to be based in our community and based in our family. I think that's where it all really starts at. We can go, once we start jumping above all of that and start talking about doing all this ridiculous shit, boycotting this one, boycotting that one, not doing this, not going, it just becomes, you're running the hamster's wheel. What we need to do is, we need to empower our families. We need to teach economic responsibility, teach our children about budgeting. You understand what I'm saying? About consumer math. You know what I'm saying? We need to teach these things to our children, and then, we need to get in these streets. We need to take over these streets as far as economics goes. We need to start taking over these corner stores, store by store. We need to boycott one store, because I do think boycotting can work. It works like this. You have two stores. I'm going to just keep this plain Jane right now for you, and I'm going to try to keep it as short as possible. You got two stores, and this is for Black people. I'm talking to Black people, so anybody else can take it how they want, but in the Black community, we need Black economics and resources, and everybody's sucking them dry. So we got my Arab motherfucker over here. We got the Korean over here, right? He's on one corner. He's on the other. We're going to say nobody can go to the Korean. You know what I'm saying? Nobody can go to the Korean. Everybody got to go to the Arab. The Korean is out of business in a month. Guess what? We taking that store over. We up in there now. Now we done bought that little spot. We done put our store up in there. Guess who's next? Nobody can buy from the Arab now. Now his store out of business. Now we took both of them stores over. Now that we took both of those stores over, we have a somewhat of an economic structure right there. You understand? We use that as a foundation, and then from there we spread and grow and branch.
Yeah, because I believe. Go ahead.
We get into local politics. It's important that Black people go to local politics. People talk all this bullshit about I did this, I did that, I was here, I was there, but motherfucker, was you out of town meeting? When the last time you had was at one of them to see the things that actually affect when you walk outside your fucking door. So when you start thinking like that has to be the mentality. We're thinking too big with Return Trump and the Freddy fucking Krueger. He's not gonna get you when you go to sleep in your dreams, people. But the motherfucker that you ignore and not going to the booth to worry about in your local community is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you gotta understand.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think it's Dr. Claude Anderson writes about that, right? Powernomics, one of his books, his concept.
Claude Anderson, a god in this. We need people like that.
Yeah.
Teach these people.
Yeah, so I mean, like I said, none of these concepts we talk about are new. They've been out there. It's really just about implementing.
None of them are new.
Yeah, none of them new.
Implementation is just what's not been being done.
Yeah,
so Harvey had a solution so good that at least three other motherfuckers used it and did all types of shit in their country with it. But the people that he was talking to...
Who? Give me the three.
Well, two off the bat is Ho Chi Minh and Mao Zedong.
But they was influenced by Garvey?
They both came to the States and studied under Garvey.
Oh, I didn't know that, yo. I gotta check it out.
Then you also have Adolf Hitler, who was influenced by Garvey. Because it's like, well, shit, motherfucker. What the fuck was Garvey talking about if Adolf Hitler was influenced by?
Nah, the thing is,
nationalism, though. It wasn't he was influenced by what he was speaking. As he wanted to, it was the nationalist structure that he was talking about.
Yeah, nah, I didn't know that. I'm going to check that out. So, you said Ho Chi Minh, Hitler, and...
We're going to say, I said Ho Chi Minh, Mao Zedong,
okay.
And then we're going to put Hitler in the mix because he didn't come to America and study under Marcus Garvey, but he studied his words, his works. You know what I'm saying? He studied his works.
I'm going to tell you, obviously, Hitler is the boogeyman for good reasons, right? But it's interesting because he wrote about what he was going to do in his book. Like, he told people what he's going to do, which is the same thing kind of sort of Trump did. He told people what he's going to do and achieved it.
And then did it.
But I'm not, like, I think that's interesting that he studied Garvey. Garvey has issues too, though, but we don't got to talk about them here.
We're going to talk about that, just not today.
Not today,
we're
gonna
talk about Garvey. We're going to have that conversation. They're going to air it out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Garvey had his issues. We had that conversation, for the record, anybody who might have happened to witness that conversation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was off guard. You caught me off guard in that conversation.
Who, me?
First time, yeah. You might not have noticed it because I'm acting fucking fast on my feet. My shit is that sharp. You probably didn't even notice
it. I didn't even notice it. I don't even remember.
You had to say who, me. I know you didn't notice it.
I remember because we spoke about Garvey a couple times. I don't even remember like the specific time you talked about.
Only the first time. After that, I said, okay, I know what he covered with. I know it. I got an idea what he could tap me with.
Got you.
Me off guard. It was like, ooh, shit. You know, it's one of the punches where the punch didn't hurt as much as it made you wobble because your balance wasn't there. You're like, oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Damn, yeah.
Okay. So you might not have seen it. You might not have seen it because I still had the poker face, but it was
a good one. Yeah, nah, we'll talk about that later. So I think that's a good first step is to really to start with group economics. And I guess we can I'll post some like links to Dr. Claude Anderson books. So people don't everything gonna be right there for people so they have no excuses for you said this, but you ain't put the link in, like, you know what I'm saying? So there's no really no excuse. I mean, there's really no excuses, period, but I'm gonna make it as easy as possible for people to go check this out. What books do you think people should be reading right now, or they should read?
The Destruction of Black Civilization, Chancellor Williams, is a must. I've read, like, that's one of those you gotta read.
Oh, yeah.
As far as the Destruction of Black Civilization, Chancellor Williams, a must read.
Uh-huh.
That's like, you have to read that.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite books.
Blueprint for Black Power, pardon me.
I'm not familiar with that one. Who wrote that one?
Amos Wilson.
Amos Wilson, okay.
Dr. Amos Wilson. What's another great book to read? I'm trying to just think of shit that's necessary right now.
Nah, that's what I want you to give them right now, the necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I think things that are necessary. Like, I think that those two give you two good sides to cover.
But truth be told, we could end it with that one because the Destruction of the Chancellor Williams book. What's his official title?
Destruction of Black Civilization.
Destruction of Black Civilization.
And the reason why I suggest that is because there's an understanding that we need to know about when we talk about the relationship between black and white people.
Yeah, nah. I think with that book alone, actually, I got to reread that joint. That book alone is, one, it's a lot of information in it, and two, it's not one of those books that you should just read once and be done with it.
Nah, you can't just read that book once and be done with it. It's like a Bible.
It's like a Bible. That's about to say that. I'm about to go there. It's like a Bible.
You gotta go through it and read it and then use it and then quote it. Like, it's one of those you go back to. However, because it's like a Bible, sometimes it can be distorted. And other people, from their recitation of it, you start forgetting what's in that book. And then you gotta go back and say, damn, they kept using it to make their points. But I forgot this whole, like, the most staunchest, the most hardcore black power anti-white motherfuckers, that is the Bible to them, right?
Yeah.
Just like, that's the Bible to them. However, when quoting it, there's certain parts of that book that they would never mention that you wouldn't know existed if you didn't read that book.
You didn't read the book, yeah.
Only went off of their quotes. And one of them was the involvement with non-blacks in affairs that were on the African continent, dealing with other non-blacks, where these non-blacks were sided with us, and in fact, nationality within the perimeter of where they were at were just as equal or looked at the same as the blacks in the area because of their relation to that people in the land.
Yeah, that's a fact. We're going to end it on that, brother.
Because it makes it look like I'm saying that You know what I mean? And I don't want it to seem like, because that's not the case.
Yeah.
You still got to be on your toes, Black man.
Yeah, nah. Well, I was saying we're going to end it. We're going to do it again. We're going to make it a, try to do a weekly, a bi-weekly or something. But I'm saying that because it's 6:30 now. I'm getting given the
absolutely. Well, nah, well, you got to chop and do all of that shit anyway. But this was a great conversation, though, brother.